Welcome to Political Rewind. We are here in Savannah, Georgia, at the... We have a big audience here at the Jewish Education Alliance, and we're so happy that we're back in Savannah. It's been a while. We were here in January, and this community was incredibly welcoming to us, and we're so glad to be back. We have so much to talk about now, with less than a week to go until the election. So I'm going to get right to saying hello to our panel and start talking about the issues. Sitting right next to me here in the Jewish Education Alliance Auditorium, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Mr. Jim Galloway.
Thank you. Like I said last time, I knew I was in the right place when my GPS said, turn left on Bull Street, and then turn right.
You know Galloway, he writes in the Wednesday and Sunday AJC, and he oversees the Political Insider blog at myajc.com, Politically Georgia.
We're simplifying it.
Yeah, we use it all the time to find out what's going on. If you live here in Savannah, Susan Catron is the one who helps keep you informed about what's going on. She's the executive editor of Savannah News. Your website, Savannah Now, is the website, yes?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Lots of things there, including the Commute podcast every day from our editorial page.
Oh, okay, great, great. Mm-hmm. It's great to have you with us again, Susan. And on the far end of the panel, sitting to the far right on this stage.
There you go, proudly.
Eric Johnson, a former state senator, Republican state senator from Savannah. How many years did you serve?
17.
17 years, then went on to run for governor. And now you're in the architecture, but you're in the building business, essentially, designing and building buildings down here, right?
Yep. Gotta have a firm foundation.
And right next to you, the chairman of the Chatham County Commission, another former legislator and former Georgia Labor Commissioner, Mr. Al Scott. Thank you for being with us, Al. Jim, for us, this is kind of always old home week when we see Al and Eric. I mean, we knew these guys. We've known them for years up there at the Capitol.
Yeah, they used to look a lot younger. They All right. One had more hair. One has been using a little bit of color.
Galloway and I are the last two ought to be talking about other people's
hair. Oh, but it's
hair.
Fun, yeah.
All right. So, Jim, let me start with you. We're coming down to the last less than a week until the election. And, you know, it's funny because we've talked on this show a lot about the fact that, for the most part, candidates for governor, candidates for Congress, have been kind of staying at home in terms of the issues that are on their plate. They haven't really been tying into the debate nationally about so many things, some of which we'll talk about tonight. And yet all of a sudden, as we come toward the close, we're going to see a real nationalization of the campaign. We've got Mike Pence coming into Savannah tomorrow, Thursday, right? He'll be here in your town. He's also going to be in Dalton, I think Columbia County.
Grovetown, I think.
Yeah, Grovetown, three stops. Then you've got former President Obama in Atlanta at Morehouse on Friday. And then you've got the President coming to Macon on Sunday. What's going on here? I mean, it does feel like there's a bigger push by Republicans. I think one of the Trump daughters-in-law was in town today for Brian Kemp, especially what's going on with all this Republican energy down here.
Well, nationally, I think what you're seeing is a real push to hang on to the U.S. House, if it's at all possible, and then preserve that slim margin that they think they might have in the Senate.
So, Eric, I wonder, that's interesting, because I always think that the first thing they're doing is coming down here, say, Trump and Obama, to get voters turned out for our gubernatorial candidates, for Kemp and Abrams. Certainly that's part of why they're coming, right?
Yep, they're trying to gin up the base, both sides. I think it's a sign of concern on the Democratic side that they're bringing in former President Obama, who lost the state twice, but they need to get somebody down here to help get their base out. And of course, Trump, love him or not, he gets the base fired up.
Yeah. Yeah, but Al, it's interesting. One of the things that Eric just said, in 2014, and actually before that, Democratic candidates for statewide office were reluctant to be seen with national Democrats. They didn't want to be seen with Barack Obama. Jason Carter certainly didn't want to. But Stacey Abrams is a different kind of Democrat. She's embracing, to some extent, the progressive agenda of the Democratic Party. So it's really not surprising that she'd be thrilled to have Obama here, is it?
What was surprising is Jason not wanting him here. And let me just tell you, I think what he brings is excitement to the race. I also think that he will energize and help turn out blacks in Metro Atlanta. And that's part of it, not all of it, but that's part of the key to Abrams being able to win the governorship.
Susan, the Trump visit comes at an interesting time. There's a brand new national Republican commercial that's just been released. The Trump campaign put $6 million into this commercial. Most people have not seen it yet. If you watch us on TV on Sunday and listen on Friday, we're going to play it on that show. But here's why it's fascinating. There isn't a single mention of or picture of Donald Trump in the spot. It looks like a Ronald Reagan re-election, It's Morning Again in America commercial. So it's interesting. There seems to be a recognition among Republicans that this is not a popular guy in terms of local races right now, and yet here he comes.
That's true. We see a lot of letters but we see more talking about the issues, talking about the GOP, talking about the strengths and the things that have occurred as part of the administration, but they don't always mention him anymore, and they used to.
You know what's interesting about the presidential visits, okay, Obama is coming Friday, I think in the afternoon.
Yeah, to Morehouse.
And Trump is coming on Sunday. Both are there effectively after early voting is over. Right. And, you know, especially with Trump, it looks like it's a stop designed to at least lessen any backlash that might be existing. To lessen any time for Democrats to react to whatever he says.
Eric, do you see any danger for Republicans in terms of the polar? I mean, you're right. He'll bring out the base, but will he also energize the Democrats who have been angry at him for his entire almost 2 years in office now? Will it work both ways?
It works both ways. I mean, let's remember the same. The Obamacare and the increases in health care. I mean, both President Obama's going to drive the Republicans out just as much as Trump's going to drive the Democrats out. The battle's for the independents, and we have yet to figure out where they're going to go.
Yeah.
The 3 or 4 or 5% out there that are undecided. And one other comment I want to pick up on of why I think they're not down here as much about the congressional races as they are about redistricting. The next governor's going to have a veto pen to have to negotiate with the legislature on redistricting, which includes all of the congressional districts in this state. So I think that's one of the reasons the parties are playing so big in this governor's race.
You know, Al, again, to pick up on this notion of Obama as both an energizing and polarizing figure, there was a time, I haven't seen any approval ratings or popularity figures about Obama in Georgia for quite a while now, since he left the White House. There was a time when Obamacare was, a poison pill. Right now, it looks like, especially pre-existing conditions, pretty popular across the board, so much so that Republicans are embracing it as if they're the ones who are behind it. So I'm not sure that there's quite the same, is there really? Do you think even Republicans are still as angry at Obama as they always have been?
Oh, absolutely not. The only thing about the Affordable Care Act they didn't like was the mandate. And they got rid of the mandate, so they left everything else that everybody loved about the Affordable Care Act. And now it's more popular than the current president, Congress, and everybody else. And pre-existing condition is a driver. And so I think the Affordable Care Act is something to run on, not something to run away from. And so I think it could be helpful.
Eric?
It's amazing that the party that screwed up health care we're trying to trust again to fix it. It just doesn't make any sense.
How does that happen? So I want you to have time to explain that. When you say the party that screwed up health care, tell us what that means to you.
We could have, in a bipartisan way, let's remember that Obamacare passed without a single Republican vote, not the two moderate senators from Maine or the other moderate Republican. They couldn't get anybody on board with that bill. And you can't choose your doctor, and your health care costs went up, all of which were lies that were promoted in passing it. All we really needed to do was fix pre-existing conditions. And I think there's a way to do that, and I think Brian Kemp can do that, and the state legislature can do that, although ultimately it's a federal issue.
I want to talk about health care as an issue in a few minutes. Before we get there, Jim, as I said those words, my premise, oh, maybe Obama isn't as unpopular among Republicans in Georgia as he used to be, I thought, no, that's probably wrong. What do you think?
Yeah. But I will tell you what, if you're on the other side of the aisle and you're trying to drive not just African American, but young people under the age of, say, 29 to the polls, then you could not find a better figure, I think.
Susan, give us a sense. We're recording the show, of course, on Tuesday night. It'll air on Wednesday, tomorrow. So how are people feeling about the vice president coming in? Do you sense is there excitement out there? Is he likely to turn out a big, big crowd? Where is he going to be?
He's going to be the Trade Center, I believe. But I haven't, honestly, I haven't heard much at all. He was here back for St. Patrick's Day in March. I literally haven't heard much at all. And I was surprised. I had one call today. Somebody asked, you know, when they could go and would there be a ticket announcement, which I don't have yet. But I haven't heard much. I think everybody's figured out what they're going to do. I'm not sure how much difference it's going to make for anybody to come in.
It's really true, yeah. Jim. We've seen another poll today. Fox 5 in Atlanta released yet another poll that shows us what your polling did, what other polls, less reputable than yours, have shown. Well, it's true. And the percentage of undecided is just infinitesimal. So what Eric was the first to point out is this is about getting your base to the polling places.
Yeah, it's good. Look, at this point, at this late date, it's going to be hard for any poll to show who might. I mean, if you think even the best polls are going to have maybe a 2% margin of error, that means one candidate is going to have 4 percentages over another before we can call one or the other a leader. It's not going to happen. You know, maybe you're going to see that in some of the down ballot races, but it's not happening in the governor's race, at least not right now.
What are you saying, Jim? Runoff?
I have a vacation scheduled for November 19th. But look, if I were given odds on this, you know, odds are, you know, Republicans are still favored in Georgia. My secondary fallback is a runoff. My third place finisher is Stacey Abrams takes it, which could still happen, and it can happen. But the problem is that the runoff situation in the state of Georgia, and it has bounced back and forth between plurality and majority under both Democratic and Republican rule, that it's something that favors the party in power.
You know, it's funny you said that, the party in power. There have been a number of people, I wonder if any of you in the audience have been tweeted to about this, seen it on Facebook. Susan, I wonder if you've seen it. People have been sending out photographs of the absentee ballot of Georgia. And it can be startling when you first look at it. Eric, you may be aware of this, because the Republican is listed first in every race on the ballot. Now, there are people, because we've had all of these accusations of voter suppression for the months leading up to election, the election coming up, there are people who see this as another sinister sign. One of our reporters at GPB called the Secretary of State's office and said, hey, I don't see anything in the rules about you know, who goes first, why isn't it alphabetical order, whatever. And the Secretary of State's office said, no, 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 it was Roy Barnes who put that in place back when he was governor. So I called Bobby Kahn, who is, of course, his chief of staff and a great nemesis of people like you back in those days.
And,
right?
And a Savannah boy.
And he said, we didn't put it in place. It was there for a long time before that. But the reason I bring this up, Al, it really is an interesting example of how people are looking at every little thing out of concern that this election is somehow not going to be counted accurately or run honestly.
Well, it's, if you're the sitting Secretary of State and your name isn't Karen Handel, you don't resign, and so you stay in office, and then during your entire tenure, you've been trying to depress the vote, and then what else would Georgians think if anything goes awry in this election? It's going to be as if the election was stolen. Now, and I think the Secretary of State could have done Georgia a favor, not just himself, would have been to resign office to seek the governor's office. That would have been the honorable thing to do and to remove the clout. But I think there's a cloud hanging over the election. Voters will have to decide. I don't know if, when I see wheels up on Air Force One, I think desperation. Now, I don't know how it works today, but used to, when wheels up on Air Force One for a political rally, somebody had to pick up the cost of those wheels being up. And the party, whomever he was going to campaign for. And so when I see that happen and you're taking on those kind of expenses, I think that there's desperation and there's polling that we don't see.
All right. By the way, I realized I left out a piece of crucial information in talking about the ballot order. The way the state rules read are that the party in power gets the first position. If you're the if the governor is a Republican, then Republicans occupy the first position on every race, and of course it flipped. That's why I said the Secretary of State's office tried to blame that on Roy Barnes when he was in power, so I apologize for not making that clear. Eric, you know, this, I have said on the show before that while I certainly understand what people like Al Scott are saying about what they see as voter suppression, it isn't as if there, I don't think, and someone can prove me wrong, that we have a smoking gun. What we may have is trends that suggest perhaps that Brian Kemp's office has looked at ways to make sure Republican voters get out there, but I don't see the smoking gun.
I think this is all a makeup story to drive the Democrats. I mean, Brian Kemp has registered 900,000.
No, wait.
Brian Kemp has registered 900,000 voters in the last 4 years. You can register online. He's made it easier for people to register to vote and harder for illegal people to register to vote. That whole 58,000 or whatever that number of pending voters who can still vote have wrong zip codes. They've moved out of states. It's Jesus from Heaven Street. There is a legitimate reason for that list, but you don't read that in the press anymore.
But see,
you realize this is all a scam
by
the Secretary of
State.
And
so
it's
Eric
crap.
Said in that answer, Eric said something interesting. Voter purges are fairly common. You do look at people who may not live at addresses. I mean, that's happened, and that isn't necessarily sinister at all. But Eric said another thing. He said that Kemp's office has made it harder for illegal people to vote. And I don't know what that means.
Okay, well, here we had a hearing in U.S. District Court in Atlanta on Monday. And it addressed the 47,000 voters who have been set aside because of exact match. These are voter registrations.
I'm sorry, voter registrations.
Set aside
right.
Because
right.
The name on the voter registration did not match exactly with
right.
a driver's license
which
list.
Which is the law.
Yes, yeah. Yes, okay. But we have a judge now who is looking at the 3,667 naturalized citizens who have already produced a birth certificate, registered to vote, and got kicked out and placed in pending. because they didn't, because there was our driver's license status report database didn't keep up with it. She is contemplating ruling that those voters, those 3,600 voters, be set aside. Bill, there are a couple things here. We did have in the past, we have had a tradition of secretaries of state not resigning.
Sure,
Max Cleveland was an exception.
Thank you.
He did. He pulled out before he ran for Senate. You did have Kathy Cox stay on. I think the difference is, and at least Eric, correct me on the year if I'm wrong, but since 2007, Republicans in the Capitol have put a great emphasis on what they're calling voter security. That 2007 was the first voter ID bill, was it not? Mm-hmm. Okay, and that puts an issue front and center before the electorate of who should be allowed and who should not be allowed. And that's where I think this argument about whether Kemp should be serving as Secretary of State may be shifting.
Yeah, I think that you've hit on something that's important. But we got to do this. We've got to get to a break. When we come back, Susan, we're going to get a little Savannah-centric. I want to talk about early voting in Savannah, and then I want to talk about what are the issues that the people in our audience tonight think are really the most crucial in the upcoming elections. Let's get our break in right now. You're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Political Rewind. We're here at the Jewish Education Alliance in the city of Savannah. Doing our Political Rewind in front of a live audience, and we're so happy to be here. Eric Johnson is with us, former candidate for governor and state senator. Al Scott, former state senator, labor commissioner, joins us. Susan Catron, editor, executive editor of the Savannah News. Jim Galloway, of course, my partner from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who is feeling under the weather. But Jim said, I'm going to Savannah. I will not miss that crowd.
It was the seafood. The seafood's the cure.
And I should make mention of the fact that our hosts for this event, as they were months ago when we were down here, are the League of Women Voters of Coastal Georgia. Cuffy Sullivan, president of that organization, has been just terrific in staying in touch with us. Susan? Let's go dive into Savannah a little bit. What's your anecdotal feeling and evidence about how this early vote has been going down here?
Early voting's been amazing. Everyone I've talked to has been in line for a while. I think the only person I only talked to one person who'd been in line less than an hour. Today, it was open at County Mosquito Control, and somebody waited an hour and a half. She got there as it opened. I had someone leave for lunch today and came back 3 hours later. He was there for 2 hours and 40 minutes waiting to vote at the Southwest Library. So that's a good sign. And nobody was leaving the line. But I asked both of them, did anybody just give up? Nobody.
Al Scott, you're overseeing. How many polling places do you have open for early voting in Chatham County?
Well, for the first 2 weeks, it was limited to one, really. But you in that one, you had 13 stations. And now you have you have out on the islands, you have the library out there that you can go to, you've got the Civic Center, you've got, the headquarters out on Eisenhower, and then you got the Southwest Library. So now you have five places that you can go to. But I don't think that the voting has been that great in Chatham County
really?
The first 2 weeks. No, I take exception. Now, it's above 2014.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't where it was at in 08, 012. And then the other thing you have to factor in 14, you had 45 days of early voting. And now you've got 22 days. So I see it as folk in 14, that they spread it out. And now all of a sudden they got half the time and they're all trying to get in. But I would like to see the pace pick up some.
The numbers that we have for end of business yesterday in Chatham County are that 22,213 people have voted. It is 93% higher than the last midterm, but it's far less than the extraordinary turnout we're seeing across the state at this point, where we're talking about, just to give you an example of the statewide vote right now, as of yesterday, 1,345,000 people, 156% higher than the turnout in 2014. So, in a way, yeah, what you're saying is that Chatham isn't matching the excitement.
Now, in 2014, we had 17-7 to vote early. And that's over a 45-day period. And yes, we are above that. But I don't think that we're going to get to the 36,000 or some of the other numbers we've seen in 12 and 08, and that's a...
I know Galloway wants to jump in, but Eric, why don't we get
the Republicans are trying to suppress the vote. It ain't working, is it?
Yeah, let me ask Eric, just as I'm asking this as a stranger, but what's the profile of a Chatham County voter? I mean, is it older than most other communities, younger? I don't know what the racial breakdown is.
I would know better. It's a blue county, but I don't know what the racial breakdown is or the age breakdown is.
Well, what I've seen, same as everywhere. If you're 50 and older, you vote. If you're under 50, you don't vote. Now, what I've seen is that the people who are 50 and older makes up 70% of the voting. Mm-hmm. And then you've got those folk who, from 40 to 50, that's 10 or 11%. And so you can see that's 80% of it there. So when you start getting below 40, they're just not voting. They're not participating in the process.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about that, because according to the voting data that we have from yesterday, you've got 11, 19, you've got about 26 to 27% of the voters who are 49 or younger, whereas you've got almost 70% of the voters are 60 and above, and you're nodding on that one, Susan.
Absolutely, and that's the same everywhere. Although I will say that different groups are taking advantage of the early voting time, because they have more time. They have, you know, no schedule. A lot of retirees were out there today, so you can look at it that way too. It's a, you know, it's a scheduling thing.
Eric, the breakdown in Chatham County of white and black voters, early voters, and this includes, of course, absentee and in-person voting, has 46% are white, 44% are African-American. This is like reading tea leaves, but Stacey Abrams needs to perform significantly better in terms of that getting turnout among African Americans. She's been quite plain in saying, I need to drive up the African American vote. I don't see that in Chatham County right now.
Not yet. It's an interesting dynamic, because the theory in the past was you run a moderate Democrat to appeal to the independents and the suburban voters. And this year, Stacey Abrams beat Stacey Evans soundly, who would have been the traditional thing. So it's, and you see that nationwide. It's the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, progressive wing of the party, and it certainly is helping raise money and generate enthusiasm on the Democratic side. So we'll see whether that strategy works or not. But it's a different strategy.
Al,
I don't want to overfocus on the African Americans, but if Georgia was duplicating Chatham County, Abrams would win. And let me tell you why. The African-American population in Chatham County is 40%.
It's 40%, okay.
The voter registration in Chatham County is roughly 39.5, right at 40%. They're outperforming their population.
Gotcha.
Okay, the state of Georgia is roughly 30% black. If you were to get 34% of the electorate on election day that's out of the African-American community, that would be good news for Stacey Abrams. So when you look at the numbers are depressed, the numbers are not where I want them, but percentage-wise, they're pretty good in a county that's 40% black.
Al and Eric, let me ask you, if I'm sitting in front of my computer next Tuesday night and I'm looking for surprises to come out of Chatham County, what are the one or two races that I should be looking at?
I think the only race that's worth watching down here is probably the Ron Stevens House race. I'm not sure who his opponent is, and he'll win it. But that district has just been changing demographically, and he's got a challenge there. In fact, he's got a poll where he's up, but Abrams is up in his district. So that's a challenge. That's probably the only race down here that's worth watching.
So it's a state house race, is the point.
Yeah. I'm going to pay very close attention to Ron's race, Ron Stevens, mm-hmm. the dean of the delegation. It is a district in transition. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to pay very close attention to the first congressional district race.
Talk mm-hmm. about that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I have been getting a little heat from people down this way who say we spend an awful lot of time talking about the 6th and 7th, which is true, and not enough time on Lisa Ring.
Yeah.
Thank you. And the incumbent down here, Buddy Carter. Why do you think that race could produce a surprise? One of the reasons we haven't talked a lot about it is what we've seen doesn't suggest to us that is a contest, but maybe it is.
Well, Chatham County makes up 40% of that first congressional district, and in terms of the population, it's 40% of it, and it's about 40% of the votes. And so if you get a real surge, a real push for Abrams in Chatham County, it could make that first congressional district a squeaker. Now, it would be a squeaker and perhaps in Carter's favor,
there's a big financial disparity between the two, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
So if Lisa Ring even comes close on Tuesday, yeah. then Buddy Carter's going to have to work really hard in 2020.
That's the reason that people are watching it.
Yeah.
To look at possibilities, and naturally, because what I think people in Congress have taken leave of, they've now joined the National Republican Party. And they no longer reflect the views of their districts. And you can see it in their vote, you can see it in their advertising, and you can see it in their fundraising and everything else. And what we would really like to see is congressional candidates get back to local issues and supporting issues that their district really wants.
All right. I've offered Eric a chance, but you're pass up for the time being?
I don't think Buddy has a problem at all, and I don't think he'll have a problem in 2020.
Susan,
if he was at risk, George Soros would be down here.
Oh, God. Susan, if Lisa Ring beats Buddy Carter, you're going to have a pretty big headline on the paper the next morning.
That would change up the plan. Yes. It would.
All right, so we've talked a lot about numbers. Why don't we talk a little bit, and I'm going to turn to you in the audience on a couple of these things. And I want to hear how you all feel about what the audience says about some of these issues or how you respond. We're going to do an informal applause poll. So I'm going to throw out some of the issues in the race and see which ones really resonate with you all. So let me just start. Well, but let me ask you this first. By applause, how many of you have already voted? All right.
Why are we talking to these people?
Wow, that's what I was just going to say. So you're kind of just here as spectators. How many of you think that health care is a crucial issue in the race? So, Eric, it's not surprising because the Atlanta Constitution's polling and the issues shows health care is up there about a 70%+ as one of the top issues in the race, which I suppose is one of the reasons the Republicans are now saying, you know, we've been fighting for pre-existing conditions from the start, right?
Yep. Sonny Perdue and I were the ones that made some changes that allowed OBGYNs to be a primary care physician, and we made healthcare changes. Republicans know a free market is the best solution to drive down costs. Transparency, so you can shop. I got a new knee. I couldn't shop new knees on a website because that's illegal.
All right. So with that in mind, Eric says free markets. I heard a little applause. How many think that Medicaid expansion is crucial to the state?
This is not an unbiased crowd.
Go ahead.
This is not an unbiased crowd, you can tell.
But the program is unbiased, Senator Johnson. How many of you think that gun rights, or let me say it a different way, how many of you believe that the Second Amendment is fine as it is, people should leave it alone, we don't need any more gun control laws? How many of you would applaud for that? How many of you think that we need to do things like universal background checks, which is what Al, if
there's nothing wrong with the Second Amendment. It's the interpretation of it. That's the problem. And I'm a gun owner. And no, I'm not a hunter. I've owned guns ever since I've mustered out of the military. And I don't just own one, I own multiple guns. But I think there ought to be background checks. There ought to be limitation on the number of guns that you own. I'd be happy with the four that I have. I don't think I need any more. But why would someone have multiple M16 type rifles sold to them over a short period of time, and you find a suitcase full of them in a hotel room killing people?
But okay,
and it just doesn't make sense.
Jim, I would propose that if Al Scott were running for statewide office right now, that speaking the way he is could make it more difficult. We know Abrams supports certain gun, which he calls gun safety rules, but that's still a tough position, what Al's talking about in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, it's still as long as the rural vote in Georgia is the determinant in statewide elections. But I will tell you also, Bill, I had a conversation with Peter Berg, rabbi of the temple, on Monday, and we were talking, of course, the Tree of Life situation. And, you know, he says there's got to be a way to prevent psychotic people from using weapons or from being united with weapons. And the problem is, of course, every time you get into that conversation in the legislature, somehow it just never seems to move.
Hey, Robert, why don't we put, Jim did write a beautiful column with Peter Berg from the Temple in Atlanta. We talked before the show went on the air that this community understands how precious their Jewish community is. They have one of the oldest synagogues in the United States, Mikveh Israel, 1735. We're going to post a link to your column. We'll tweet it out, Robert, or find it some way to. All right, good, because it's a really important column. We got to get another break in. I don't want to quite leave that subject yet, because I think there's more to mine there. But let's take a break, and we'll be back in Savannah in just a moment. Welcome back. Eric, we were talking before the break about gun control and the fact that it's still hard to put that issue in place here in Georgia because there are so many people in the state who want unfettered access to weapons. What do you think the Philadelphia incident might do to... It's not going to change the minds of the Second Amendment, no matter what, folks. They're Trump base. But what do you think it might mean to independents who have not gone out and voted yet?
I think, in terms of guns particularly, but beyond that. I think this is another one of those, it's an emotional issue. Guns are scary, and guns kill people. But the people, and trying to keep them out of the hands of those that are mentally ill or have a separation order is important. There already are background checks for everybody to buy a gun. In fact, none of the proponents that want to control guns would have stopped any of the shootings in Florida or in Philadelphia. None of them would have stopped the shootings. We got to keep them out of crazy people's hands, and that's probably not politically correct, but they're crazy.
All right, people that shot up
the church and the synagogue have problems. It's not the guns, it's the people.
All right, we're going to let that go. I think it's going to be interesting, Jim, to see whether some of those, especially suburban women, might think about Pittsburgh as an example of the fact that things are getting out of hand with free access to weapons.
I think Lucy McBath is going to be a good measure on Tuesday.
Absolutely. Lucy McBath, who is running largely because of the tragic incident in which her son was murdered in a gun violence incident.
But they are misled. They're being misled to believe you're going to confiscate guns and take them out of the hands of legal gun owners. That's not going to happen. And people are being made to believe that we can fix the gun problem, and they're not going to.
All right. I thank you for that, Eric. I want to get to a few audience questions because I think you've got some good ones. This is a great one. Galloway, you get first shot at this. Do you think we'll have final results in Georgia on November 6th? And I assume we're talking primarily about the governor's race.
I'm
too old to stay up late.
Yeah. Look, I feel pretty confident. I mean, number one, we can argue about the security of these voting machines, but they do give us returns pretty darn quick. And I would expect that we're going to have at least a good sense of the results. You know, if not by November 6th, then by.
Your microphone, I'm sorry, is going in and out.
That's
we fix
okay.
that real quick? Try
but
again.
All that said, I'm hoping you're right, that they're in and they're done. But I'm not so sure. I'm really not sure.
I mean, one of the questions, obviously, is really, is somebody going to get over 50% before midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m.?
See, and I don't know.
Al?
I don't think you'll have the results back on the 6th. You'll have them early morning of the 7th. So you have to do one of two things. Go to bed early and get up, sleep in and plan on staying up late. But I do expect the returns by morning. I see today I would call a runoff. And if you look at previous gubernatorial election, even in 2014 when you had Carter and Deal polling pretty close. About the last week, you saw Carter pulling away 48, 49, and then finally 50%. And you ended up winning that election with 52% of the vote. We have, depends on who you believe, 3% undecided. Mm-hmm. And for the life of me, I can't see how you can be undecided by one of those candidates. And so I don't see him moving up in the polls. And so I'm thinking there's going to be a runoff.
Jim,
so
you know, this would
get
be
the results. You'll get the results in December.
It would be, and it would be historic. We've never had a runoff for governor.
No,
the vote to watch is the Libertarian.
Yeah.
Pardon? The vote to watch is the Libertarian.
Yeah, Ted.
If he gets over 3%, we're probably in a runoff.
Right, but we've had two runoffs in U.S. Senate races in '92 and '08, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the last candidate for governor who didn't get a plurality was Lester Maddox, and the legislature decided that
right,
race.
Right. Here's a question. Most forecasters predict a close gubernatorial race. What about the other candidates in contests further down the ballot? Now, we don't have great data. Certainly we have no polling that we can really point to that we think we have a lot of confidence in. So let me ask it a different way. I don't want to put one in the victory seat and the other not. Will the lieutenant governor's race depend on who wins the gubernatorial race? Eric, you're immediately
shaking
your head.
Duncan wins that one comfortably because all the money's going to Abrams, so they don't even know who Duncan's running against.
I will tell you what, Bill, just talking to Republicans who are paid to worry about these things, look at the two PSC races down at the bottom of the ballot. Mm-hmm. Republicans have a bad habit of just falling away from the ballot as they get to the bottom. And I know Chuck Eaton, who's the Republican incumbent for one seat, is worried about it. Trisha Pridemore, the same. And you've got two good Democratic candidates and a Libertarian in each of those races, Don Randolph against Pridemore and Lindy Miller against Eaton.
Well, you know, if Barrow wins the Secretary of State's race and Abrams loses, it's going to show, well, maybe the model is to go back to a moderate, which is what John Barrow is.
You know what, Susan? Jim just mentioned the PSC races, and that really, you're not far away from dealing with one of the biggest issues this state is facing, and that's what happens to the construction of Plant Vogtle. And if you end up with two Democrats in those seats, they've been sort of cagey about their position on continuing the construction of Vogtle, but there have been a lot of jobs at stake there.
Well, they're not cagey. You know, they're saying both Democrats are saying the construction has to continue.
Okay, then that's newer information than I have, because I thought they were sort of hedging their bets at this point.
No, we haven't seen any difference. Our reporter Mary Landers has covered them pretty extensively, and we haven't seen any differences.
It's one of these situations where the dynamics are really interesting. Of course, Republicans are backing Georgia Power's play, but Democrats, they've got the IBEW on their side,
right?
And they've got 5,000 workers on site.
Well, another difference down here is South Carolina backed off of theirs, and we saw the chaos and the animosity and the anger that erupted over there. So we're a little bit closer to what would happen if you stop Plant Vogtle than you are maybe in Atlanta.
Al? Yeah.
If you're concerned about greenhouse gases and the environment, you continue Plant Vogtle. That's just my opinion of it. And I think the two Democratic candidates have been, in fact, somewhat anti-Plant Vogtle. When you get elected, I think they'll get co-opted. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. All right. This is why I have real journalists. So let me go on with a couple more questions here. Let me see if I can find one. Trump seems to be doing a great deal of midterm campaigning. How does it compare with the amount of time other presidents spent doing the same? You know, well, I think I'm, you know, can say in a word, a couple of words, no comparison. This guy has determined he is going to carry Republicans and therefore support for himself across the finish line.
I'm trying to remember the last time we had a president in a midterm election saying, no, this race is about me.
I've never seen it.
And he would be correct.
L. Scott says he'd be correct, which is all the more reason this closing ad for the Republicans is so interesting that he's not even
The Republicans hold the Senate, which everybody, and maybe pick up seats, he will have accomplished that. And if the Republicans lose the House by a little bit, he still beat. Barack Obama lost 6 Senate seats and 30 House seats in his first midterm election. So Trump is more popular than Obama.
All right. Here's a good point. There's a Chatham County poll worker in the audience who says, he or she is frustrated by the national media conversation on voter suppression. Please tell your listeners those voters should still go to the polls on November 6th and cast at least a provisional ballot. And, of course, what's interesting about that, Susan, is the Abrams folks who have talked about voter suppression, had railed about it, they have this kind of mixed message they got to deal with. Yeah, we think there's voter suppression, but make sure you don't hesitate to vote.
That's been constant. And you get, I don't know, I get a dozen email releases of some description all day. And the first one will say, oh, we've got voter suppression. The second one will say, but you got to go vote. No matter what, you can vote. Please go vote. And so it is kind of a double edge there.
Secretary of State Kemp refuses to resign. We've discussed that. If the governor's race is too close to count, Kemp said he will, to obviously declare a victor. Kemp said he will not recuse himself for a recount. And certainly he says he's not going to recuse himself, because he told this to your colleague, Greg Bluestein, if there's a runoff.
And I'm not sure of what recourse there would be. Whether I don't think you can go to court and suggest that a sitting state official not do his job. I think you might start to see some Republicans looking at polls to see how much danger he's in a runoff. And we may be in a new world. I mean, in the old world, a Republican wouldn't have to worry, but in a new world, maybe. And if the polling is not in his favor, then maybe he does. Maybe he does recuse himself. Not resign, just recuse.
All right. I can't believe it, but we are out of time for this show. So I am really delighted we've been back down here with y'all in Savannah. Eric Johnson, you were with us the last time we were here. You're back. It's really a pleasure to be able to speak with you. And it's just plain great to see you again, as always, Eric. Same with you, Chairman Al Scott. We enjoy your company and are glad you could come back. Susan, you were here, Susan Catron, last time as well. You've been a great panel. Maybe we're going to have to come back again sometime. Jim Galloway, go get some rest.
After the buffet you promised.
Thank you again to Cuffy Sullivan and the League of Voters of Coastal Georgia, and to all of you in this terrific Savannah audience. Thank you so much for turning out. We've loved having you here for Political Rewind from Savannah.